Jerry Steele, and you're listening to the Miss McBookworm podcast, a place for Christian women who write fiction to share their stories. Today, I'm talking with Rachel Knowles. Rachel is a novelist whose work and historical research center on the Regency period. Rachel, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Jerry, for having me.
Well, tell me a little bit about your writing journey.
Well, I guess my writing journey began when I was a small girl, when I was at school, as young as 5, 6, 7, as soon as I could write, I was writing stories. And a teacher said to me when I was about 10 that he said I ought to gather all my ideas together and put them in a book one day. And when I was older, 13, I read Pride and Prejudice for the first time. And I fell in love with Mr. Darcy and the whole of the Regency period. And I thought then that when I wrote a novel, I wanted to set it in the time of Jane Austen. And ever since then, I was moving towards this goal of writing a novel. But it wasn't until we moved to Weymouth in 2010, I started to have the chance to actually make my dream come true and actually start writing Beriel.
And so tell me a little about that, kind of what it's like writing about the place where you live, but the historical element of it and sort of that sense of place that you can bring to your novels.
I love visiting the places that I write about. Most of my novels are set in places that I've been. So you'll hear me writing about London, about Weymouth, where I live now, about Hampshire, where I lived before. So I tend to use places that I know what they're like today. And that helps me to have a feel for the place. But I also do a lot of research into what the town or city was like at the time.
And you do include quite a lot of just rich detail in your stories. And so can you talk a little bit about, as a writer, how you balance that amount of historical detail and description with just moving the plot along and character development? Because I could see myself just diving in and spending a lot of time on description of these things that I'm interested in, but you still keep the rest of the story going. So how do you balance that out?
I find that what I do is I try and avoid the big thing for historians, which is a history dump. So when I'm writing, I try to make sure that any history I bring in is natural to the story. And that's really a lot behind the way I write. So if I want to include some history to make the setting genuine, for instance, about visiting the Tower of London, which is what my characters did in one book, I've used guidebooks from the time, and it's natural the way it comes out, what they might have seen and how it would have been, rather than just going, oh, this is what it was like, and describing it. It's more seeing it through their eyes rather than telling you what it was like at the time.
That makes a lot of sense. I can see that. Well, tell me a little bit, because you do historical research as well, right? Can you tell me a little bit about your Regency history site?
Right back when I started moving towards my dream, the first thing I did was to start researching the late Georgian and Regency period, because I wanted to be like Jane Austen. And Jane Austen wrote about the time she lived in, but I had to discover what that world was like. And I wanted to write novels that were historically accurate. So I started doing the research and was sharing my research on the Regency History blog. And the blog sort of ran away with itself and became an entity in its own right, quite apart from my research. And my husband, Andrew, now helps me to run that blog. And so we're running the research side behind me writing my romance tales set in that period of history.
I love that because my husband and I also work a lot together on our, I guess, creative interests. So the podcasts we produce together, and he helps me with my writing and vice versa. And so tell me a little bit about how the two of you work together and, you know, how, you know, sort of that relationship dynamic works.
Well, Andrew will tell you that when he edited, so Andrew is my main editor. And he will tell you that when he edited my first book, A Perfect Match, he was like treading on eggshells. It was my baby and he didn't want to upset me. He's a lot more brutal now. And we get a much better. You can laugh, but it's true. And he is much more likely to tell me about how something doesn't work or doesn't sound right. We don't have the same style and we appreciate that. He will always use less words than me. But he is a fantastic developmental editor and has saved me a lot of time by pointing out the plot holes in my book and rearranging it sometimes before I get too engrossed in the actual writing.
Oh, that's fantastic. So what are some of your other strategies and ways that you have grown as a writer since you said you started back in 2010, really in earnest?
Yeah, sort of 2010, 2011 was when I started researching and writing on the blog. And writing on the blog in itself was a discipline. And obviously, I had to do a lot of writing to get the content on the blog. So I think part of developing as a writer is actually doing it. And it's not talking about writing or learning about writing, it's actually writing. And where I have developed, I have two writer friends that I have a group with, and we have worked together on a joint project. And, you know, sometimes, you know, we encourage each other and give advice about, you know, actually the writing aspect is only part of being a writer, and the marketing side of it, we share a lot about how to market our books and things, trying to encourage each other and promoting each other online. And that's been really helpful, especially when you're having a difficult time. You sometimes need somebody else who understands the writing game to listen to you. And I think that's been really good. I also have as well as Andrew reading my work, one of my daughters regularly reads my work, and she will give me a female perspective of someone who actually likes reading Christian fiction. So she will give me a different opinion on some things to what I've had from my primary editor, Andrew.
Well, I have three young daughters myself, and so I'm always curious, were you able to write when your children were younger, or was this more of something that you were able to do in a different season of life? Just how did you make it work from the parenting perspective?
I have always written, but I haven't written consistently while the children were growing up. It was just not on. We've got four daughters, and looking after them growing up was a full-time job. I think that it was only when we moved to Weymouth and we were in a different season of life. I started well before retirement age, I like to put it. Not there yet. I found that I was freed up. I didn't, you know, we were at a time when I didn't have to go and get a part-time job. Therefore, I could go and do some work, do the writing seriously. And Andrew supported me in that, which was really wonderful. I don't think you can do it, something like that, without the support of your partner.
Yes, that's been invaluable to me too, because I haven't had to, you know, do it all myself. And my husband is my editor, so that frees up some time from that end in terms of the podcast. And, you know, also though, that's super encouraging to me to hear that your interest in writing was there all along and you were able to do, you know, little bits and pieces, but that, you know, as you entered another season, you were able to devote more time to it, because, you know, right now with my girls still being young, I, you know, frequently do not have, I can't write every day unless I sacrifice, you know, significant sleep, and I'm not willing to do that. But I think, you know, in 10 years, life is not going to look like what it looks like right now. And, you know, this is a particular season of life with some particular challenges, but also a lot of wonderful benefits. And the writing, you know, can always be there and look different at different times. So that's very encouraging to me.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, I would just encourage you to write when you want to.
Yeah, I like that. My, I guess, just experience in terms of reading contemporary Christian authors has, I think, almost exclusively been American authors. And so I'm so happy to discover your work, but also kind of pleading my own ignorance here, have you found any significant differences between the book market or the publishing market or just writing in general from the British perspective versus the American perspective?
That's a very interesting question. Obviously, I'm an indie writer, so I'm independently published, and therefore I had to make the decision: was I going to, for instance, adopt American spelling, because obviously the American market is much bigger than any other. And I decided quite early on that I was going to stick to Jane Austen's English, if you like. And so I don't use American spellings. I try and avoid things that Americans would find confusing. But certainly the books that you're talking about, the American Christian writers, they're just not in the libraries here. So it, for me, we're discovering an online world where writers like Julie Klassen and I can read them, you know, find them accessible. So whether they're indie published or whether they are traditionally published, we don't get a lot of the American literature in our libraries. And there is not that much in the way in what the genre I'm writing available in the UK.
That is so interesting to me because professionally I'm a librarian. So that's also interesting from that perspective. So yeah, really you've kind of been, it sounds like in a little bit of a different, I guess, different exposure to what fiction is currently out there. We're getting maybe two different sets of things being promoted and all of that. So that's really interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think particularly the difference has become now that we've got, you know, access to world literature in a way that we didn't have before the internet sales were so big. You know, previously, I mean, I grew up on library books and, you know, growing my collection of Georgette Heyers and Jane Austen and the like. But there was very little growing up in the clean Regency sector. And there is now, you know, quite a large amount of literature in that sector, but most of it is American.
Okay. Well, one question I always try to ask my guest is how their faith informs their fiction and then vice versa, how writing has come to inform or kind of affect their faith. And so what would you say on that?
When I wanted to start writing, so I had the very clear idea I wanted to write in the style of sort of Georgette Heyer. I don't know whether you're familiar with Georgette Heyer's writing, but she's like the classic Regency romance writer after the time of Jane Austen. So she was writing in the 20th century, but she was like the first person really to write in that genre. And she wrote, I would call her novels clean, but they're not Christian. And when I came at it, it was a case of, well, am I going to write like her, or am I going to put, you know, more of my faith into what I'm writing? It was definitely going to be there, but whether it was just in the background or featuring more was, I debated about it for a long, long time, because obviously the clean Regency market is much bigger than the the sort of Christian Regency market. And it was a case of, well, where, you know, from a commercial point of view, what should I be writing? And I debated about this long and hard. I felt that for a lot of Regency stories hang on having a reformed rake or in their storyline. And I, for a long time, had doubted how many, if you like, reformed rakes could really do that without having a faith. Because I believe in, you know, faith in Jesus being a transformational effect on people's lives. And I just find, you know, just falling in love, for me, I didn't feel it was enough. So I had that always in the background. But I guess the time that I made the decision was when I was writing my first novel, and I felt that God gave me the outline of the plot for it. And it had a conversion story in it. And it was very much part of the plot line. It needed to happen for the plot. And that was really what made me go. And I call my books faith-based rather than, you know, in preference to Christian, like out and out Christian, in as much as you won't find me preaching in any, you know, I try and avoid any bits of narrative or even conversation that are overly preaching. I like the faith of my characters. So my hero and heroine will always be Christians by the end of the book, even if they're not at the beginning. And I work with the way that their faith comes out naturally in the way that they're dealing with life, whatever life I choose to throw at them in the plot. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I love that. And I love the description of it being faith-based, and that gives it just a little bit more nuance, I think. And that's wonderful. Okay, well, tell us a little bit about what you're going to be sharing today.
Okay, my publishing history has been interesting because, as I said, I found the Regency History blog took on a life of its own, and I, in the middle of writing my initial series of books about the Merry family called The Merry Romances, I got asked to write a history book. So I kind of have had, so I first published the first book in the series back in 2015, and I just published the third book in the series in 2024, which is, as you can see, and there was the middle books like 2021, so it's been very spread out. Mm-hmm. So my publishing, this series has been in my heart for a long time, and I feel like I know the characters inside out and back to front. And I'm going to read the first chapter of my new release, A Single Obsession, which the obsession in question is that the hero is obsessed with horses. But it's really not as simple as that. He's really fighting for his identity because he's got a domineering mother who holds the purse strings.
Oh, well, I can't wait to hear, and I am so excited for our listeners to hear it as well. But thank you so much for taking time to be on today.
It's been a pleasure, Jerry.